This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Elgium Talks, where we're having a DB-focused session talking about stepping stones to endgame. My name is Alyssa Ford, and I'm joined today by Lisa Purdy, Head of Fiduciary Distribution.
Hello.
And by Priti Sagu, Head of Pricing and Execution on our Pension Risk Transfer team.
Hello.
Lisa and Priti, thanks for joining me today. So in preparing for the podcast today, I looked up some of the original uses of the word endgame, and it's often used in chess to describe one of the late stages where both players have very few pieces left on the board. It can be an interesting time, but each can be forced to make some uncomfortable moves that they didn't necessarily plan for. Now, in a way, this makes me think of DB pension schemes. Even if they're both heading for the same target, they might have to get there in a different and slightly unexpected way. But I think, Lisa, probably one of the biggest differences is that endgame isn't necessarily the same thing for two pension schemes in the same way that it's always checkmate for a chess player. So what are pension schemes aiming to do when they're talking about endgame, and why are they doing this now?
Yeah, great question. So two main endgames for pension schemes. First one, self-sufficiency. So this is where the pension scheme is aiming for a very low-risk strategy where they pay the pensions in perpetuity to right through to the end of the scheme. So tends to be, as I said at the start, low-risk and very cash-flow-driven sort of strategy. The other main one, which is going to be our focus today, is buyout. And so this is where you pass all the liabilities off to an insurer. But it's probably worth spending a bit of time really on why are we talking about endgames. And I guess one of the key reasons is those targets have come in. And so actually we've seen a number of surveys out recently, but suggesting that that time frame has come in to less than 10 years and two-thirds of schemes expecting to get there within 10 years. We're also seeing the regulator having a really big focus on long-term objectives. So actually, the focus has gone away from technical provisions and sort of a steady state world over to an endgame situation. And that's really because so many schemes have closed over the last few years. The Purple Book says there's only 12% of members are active nowadays. So we've got this situation where we don't have that many open schemes anymore. They're getting more mature, so they're getting older. And they're also getting better funded. So that end game, as I said before, is actually coming into sight now.
It's actually worth looking at the split between the number of schemes that are looking at self-sufficiency as an end game and buyout in it, as an end game as well. And I think another important observation to share is that the number of schemes that are now considering buyout as the end game have increased a lot as well. So a different, you know, there are a couple of surveys out there right now, but, you know, the latest survey I've seen from Hymans Robertson, for example, says that actually there's probably 50-50 balance between schemes targeting self-sufficiency versus buyout. And then the really interesting statistic is that, according to them, the number of trustees looking at buyout now has tripled over the last 4 years. So the focus on buyout has increased, as Lisa, you've just explained as well.
Gosh, so a tripling of the number of trustees looking at buyout must have had quite a change in the market. What does the buyout market actually look like today?
Very good question. It's actually really busy, and that busyness has been ramping up over the last couple of years. So 2018 was a record year for the buyout market, with over £24 billion of deals that were done. Now, that felt like a huge amount for us all in 2018. But in 2019, in November, right now, the market is, there have already been £36 billion of deals that have been announced. So a real bumper year in the buyout market with lots of large transactions. And that's another change we've seen. The frequency and size of large transactions has really has really made a step change, actually. So in 2018, the biggest transaction ever done at the time was done. It was with British Airways, over £4.4 billion transaction. Gosh. And then this year, Rolls-Royce transacted earlier this year at £4.6 billion. So some really chunky transactions going on, yeah.
That's interesting. So there are large transactions happening basically with increasing frequency in the market. But is it all driven by these larger transactions? So thinking about the smaller schemes, the ones who aren't the big multinationals or the huge UK companies, what's the situation like for them?
That's a really good question. So the fear among smaller schemes is that how do we get a seat at the table if we're ready? Is the insurance sector or the market just too busy dealing with larger schemes? And actually, that's not the case. And, you know, Legal in General as a group, we are very focused on, for example, trying to make sure that that smaller schemes have the chance to come to market as well. And we've certainly made sure that we're whole of market, basically, and that there's space and capacity. And there are ways, you know, there are things small schemes can do to facilitate that.
So we've recently, in our fiduciary business, supported one of our schemes to get through to buyout in a small scheme. So about 30 million in size. They had a US parent who was very keen to reach buyout. One of the first things we do with a fiduciary client is sit down and work out what are those long-term objectives? What are you trying to achieve? So we did that, noted it was buyout and the strong sponsor support for that. Their scheme actually had estimated it might take around 5 years in order to reach that level.
5 years. So they were quite close then to their end game.
Quite close, but, you know, there was still a bit of work to do. So they still needed a bit of growth from their assets. The company didn't really want to put any more money in at that stage, or there was a limited amount of money that they would put in. So we worked very closely with them to set a strategy that had a bit of growth in order to bridge that gap, but also look to match some of the buyout pricing as well. So investing in assets like credit, which is part of matching a buyout sort of pricing level. But then when we started working together with them and working with Pretty's team, actually, the buyout transaction price was a lot nearer than they expected. Mm. So it was a lot lower than they'd expected and was actually starting to be in a check writing distance sort of level. So at that point in time, we very quickly moved the portfolio into what we call a price lock portfolio. And that is where we have that price from the insurance side of the business and we lock it down by making sure that the assets move in perfect line with that price. And that's because you need to sort out your legals and your administration. So you need a bit of time in order to do that. So you don't want that price to move away from you during that time while you're sorting those bits and pieces out. So we were able to price lock the portfolio. And then because we were in assets that were attractive to the insurance side of the business, we were able to transition that at zero cost. And so this is a really good example of how a small scheme is able to actually get that interest from an insurer by having that fiduciary relationship with us.
Mm. So it sounds like there are quite a lot of things that small schemes have to do, but also steps they can take, as you say, like investing in assets that might be attractive to insurers in order to smooth their journey to their endgame target. So just thinking for a moment about the insurance side of the market, looking through another lens, we've talked about how 2018 was a record year for buyout transactions. And if the market is as busy as it seems to be, Pretty, what are the sort of things that insurers are going to want from pension schemes in such a when they're all competing for attention?
Mm. That's a very good question. So there are a couple of things, actually. So one is really around governance and preparation. So is there commitment from pension schemes, corporate sponsor, and the scheme trustees themselves? So is there a level of preparedness where everybody is on the same page and, you know, have reached the same conclusion? You know, often we'll see a joint working group being put in place specifically to work on a de-risking transaction and head towards buy-in and buyout. That, for us, for an insurance company, is a very good sign that the scheme is transaction ready. On the asset and liability side, is data in good shape? And actually, most schemes you will find will be working with a specialist de-risking consultant who will help them get to that level of preparedness on the data, on the cleanliness of the data and the data preparation side to share. On the asset side, actually what I would say is please don't go and change your asset mix before you've actually, if you're a scheme, before you've spoken to the insurance company, because how do we price these transactions? As an insurer, we actually do use credit. So credit, a liquid credit, so that can be dollar bonds and sterling bonds, mainly for us. But the other thing we invest in is very long-dated assets. So if we think of the risk we're taking on very long-dated liabilities. We have to pay members' pensions till the very last pensioner in the portfolio is deceased, effectively. So what we try and do is invest in assets, and you know it's very much our philosophy as a firm that we will generate assets as well that deliver long-term cash flows which match pension schemes liabilities that we're going to be taking on. So there are signs for us that show a scheme is ready, and you know for us it's, is the governance ready, are the assets, please don't change them, leave them as they are until, you know, you've at least shown your assets to potential buyout providers. And, yeah, I think that's pretty much it from our perspective.
I guess one of the things I'd add to that is sort of the engagement and the relationship you have with the insurance company as well. So that ability to work together on a time front as well. So that gives the insurer time to line up their assets, reinsurance pricing, and all those various aspects. And we've seen that again before with clients, that actually having that working relationship and that knowledge that, yes, they want to focus on buyout like over a period of time, that means you've got that engagement and we're able to do things at the other side, at the insurance side of things.
Mm. So for our listeners today, it sounds to me like three of the main things that they can take away from this conversation are just how busy the buyout market is today compared with, say, 5 years ago. And secondly, that despite the fact it's busy, there are a number of things that all schemes can do to prepare in terms of governance and in terms of laying the groundwork. And finally, that engagement with their insurer and with their asset manager is a really important part of this. Lisa, Priti, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. So you can find out more by reading our Stepping Stones article series on managing liquidity, journey planning, and also we have a case study, which we will provide links to in the podcast notes. I hope you can join us again soon for our next episode of LGIM Talks, and thank you for listening.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.